You're listening to Talking Baseball with Ed Randall, presented by MLB.com. He's Ed Randall. He's talking baseball. What more do you need?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, Big Ed and Nora's baby boy, and welcome back to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. This week marks the anniversary of the induction into the Hall of Fame of the great Roberto Clemente in 1973. In light of the tragic circumstances that took his life the prior New Year's Eve as he delivered supplies to earthquake-ravaged Nicaragua, the Hall waived the customary five-year waiting period for the quintessential right fielder's right fielder who struck his 3,000th hit in what would be his next to his last game. It is left to his sons to help keep his legacy alive, and we are honored to have Luis Clemente with us. Luis, thanks so much for being with us. He was the first Latin American player to be enshrined, and my goodness, as time goes on, his legacy just grows larger and larger.
Absolutely, Ed. Pleasure to be here with you on your show. It's unbelievable. Every year, there's a new invitation to commemorate that, to celebrate his life, to name a facility, a new venue, a ballpark, a school, you name it. This past year, I had the honor, and it was a first, to go to Boston to inaugurate a bust that was placed in the Puerto Rican Veterans Memorial Plaza and for his service in the Marines. So, I mean, when you think everything it's already been done, you know, once again, they surprise you with something new.
I have an old list, I think, Luis. I had your father's name on 40 schools, two hospitals, and scores of parks and ball fields stretching from Pittsburgh to Puerto Rico carrying his name. And as I said, that's probably an old list. It's more than that.
It's probably more than that, you know, and very curious. The first place ever to name something after that was not in Puerto Rico, was not in Pittsburgh, it was in Mannheim, Germany. Weeks after Dad had been managing the team, the Puerto Rico national team in Nicaragua in the series, he became really good friends with the manager from the team from Germany. And when he learned of the accident, they were about to inaugurate a ballpark then, you know, at Mannheim, and that's, you know, how it happened. They named that field Roberto Clemente Ballpark in Germany. So that's the first place ever to name something after that immediately after the accident.
I'm sure it never gets old, Luis, but when you see your father's name on a building, on a sign at a field, what goes through your mind? What are your emotions like?
I'm very honest. I've always been honest, and I'll continue to be. And I got to tell you, there was a time in life where I had to disconnect myself from relating to all that I saw with Dad's name to be able to cope with, you know, what I had to cope with, and now I'm able to do what I'm doing. But it's overwhelming. It's amazing how many places. And then when you don't see it or read it, like even when you're driving, you see Roberto Clemente Avenue or street. Mom, you know, or the house where we grew up, that street was named after Dad afterwards. And to me, it got to the point where I would read the Roberto Clemente, and hopefully the fans will not take this the wrong way, because then I will explain. I would read Roberto Clemente Avenue. To me, was like reading Franklin Delano Roosevelt Avenue. You know, I did not relate in a way where it would affect me or actually make me feel that we were like greater than life. You know, we're very humble as a family, as that was. And Mom, I mean, Mom is extremely humble. And I didn't let it get to my head. But when I looked at it in the proper way, which is, you know, what it represents, how people that we get to meet tell us what that meant to them. And, you know, it's very different and difficult to stand in front of a person that when he finds out who you are, he's shaking your hand, and all of a sudden, you know, he wants to speak. Tears are coming down. His hand is shaking, squeezing your hand really tight, and you know that is so powerful. that is, I mean, the greatest respect ever. And that basically, Rob Avanas, we treat everyone the way Dad wanted us to treat everyone, with a lot of respect. And I feel that I have people that tell me, well, man, if I were Clemente, I said, that's exactly why you're not. Because to be a Clemente, you need to know what you represent. You need to know you're part of royalty, but at the same time, you have to be so humble that you don't let it get to your head. So humble that you're really out there and basically impacting someone's life and leave without them even knowing who you are. You know, you don't have to announce it. You don't have to bring the press all along and do things just, you know, to show.
They just know. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
At what point in time, Luis, did you say to yourself, I got to get back into this. I've got to re-embrace this. What happened?
Well, what happened was, okay, I grew up and I saw all the mom pretty much on her own trying to do, and I give, here's a saying I have, but I have to say it. I am very proud of being Roberto's son, but I also feel extremely fortunate to be Vera's son as well. And mom could have, you know, decided to take in her life a totally different direction and redo her whole life, whatever, but no. She stuck to what Dad wanted to do. Dad was a little frustrated when he died, when the accident happened, because he was searching for a land. He was searching for a site to do, you know, this concept that he had in his mind. He was the intellectual mind behind the Roberto Clemente Sports City, but actually mom was the one who did it. And I saw mom is so good that she wouldn't even raise her voice to make her point, you know, at times. So the people that were alongside helping her do the project have many different suggestions and whatnot. And, you know, things like those actually triggered that desire in me. Since I was a little kid, she would tell me she was coming back from a board meeting, and I would ask, what's that? And she'd explain. And I started getting conscious, you know, about what she was doing, that this is what Dad desired. And I said, okay, I have the know-how now. I have the connections. I have, you know, all these different experiences that I've gained while traveling and everything. So I said, I think it's time for me to really get involved hands-on and continue the legacy that left for us, you know? Mm-hmm. So I call that the passing of the baton. And I give mom all the credit in the world to have continued that legacy and to inspire us. And now my sons, her grandchildren, that are involved with us as well.
Luis Clemente is with us as we commemorate the entry of his father into the Baseball Hall of Fame this week in 1973. You were just, I believe, 6 years old at the time in which he died so prematurely and so tragically. I can identify with this, Luis, because I lost my dad when I was 10 years old, and my memories are precious, but they're few. And I'm wondering about you and your memories with him.
Well, you know, I remember him at the house. Remember, we were used to not seeing him for pretty much 6 months out of the year during the season. Because, you know, he wanted mom to give birth to us in Puerto Rico. He was so proud of being Puerto Rican. And we were used to not seeing him for a certain time of the year. During the summers, we would go to Pittsburgh and watch him play. And I have memories even from Ford's Field, believe it or not. And the way he handled himself, the way he was around us, I remember, I always tell the story when Roberto and I used to play in the porch, in the back porch of the apartment that he rented in Pittsburgh. And there was a neighbor throwing out suction cup arrows, and Roberto, you know, kind of like got too smart, and he said, when it was my turn, he took mine. So we started arguing, whatever. Dad used to rest before every game. He had insomnia, so during the late hours, he would be doing Saran ceramics. He will be doing lamps. He will be doing arts and crafts and stuff like that because he couldn't sleep well. But then during the day, Mom would cover the windows with dark sheets so sunlight would not come in, and he would rest his eyes and whatever. And I remember him coming, walking behind us and sliding doors open up. And all of a sudden, we just turn, and there he is. He grabs us by the head with his huge hands, and he says, right now, with or without sleep, you're going to go to your room. And that was it. You know, he would just look at us, and we would just freeze, you know. And he was, I mean, it was so funny. And the most funny story that I remember, he was, I have to say, he was, I mean, so talented in anything and everything he did. He used to play the harmonica. There was a Hammond organ at the house, and he would play with one finger, but he would play by ear, and that's how I learned it. Later on in life, I even had my own rock band. I played keyboards, and that's where I learned on that, in that organ.
Wow.
But he was going to a trip to Nicaragua, and he asked us, what did we want from the trip? I said, I want a fish tank. I love Jacques Cousteau. I wanted to be a marine biologist. So I asked for a fish tank. Roberto asked for a pony. And then he looks at Ricky, who couldn't even speak at that time yet, and he says, and to you, I'm going to bring a monkey. and he used to ask Ricky all the time, so how does a monkey do? You know, Ricky would do the faces and whatever. Sure enough, from the trip, he came back with a live monkey. He did bring a monkey. Okay? And recently I was able, someone gave me, pictures that he found from the old papers here, and there is a monkey. You know, he used to call him Sangi as a nickname.
From Andy Sangian. You know,
yeah. So,
what was your earliest recollection? Earliest recollection that this just wasn't another father. On the block. This guy was a god in Puerto Rico. What was your earliest recollection?
Well, you know what? He would drive us to school, which is what's literally down the street, and everyone would run out to see him and everything. But to me, it was just normal. It was nothing. We didn't see him as a superhero. We didn't see him as, you know. And I laugh a whole lot because Ricky Martin was telling the story of his sons that when they grew up a little, you know, he took them to a concert and he was done. You know, after the concert, they just stare at him. Really funny, and he's like, what's up? Why are you looking at me like that? And then slowly they say, you are Ricky Martin. So, I mean, and I laugh so much about that because I could relate to that.
Sure.
To me, that was that. It was not Roberto Clemente or a superstar or whatever. That was that. But then later...
But it was just different. What I'm saying, you know, it, to your point, very well taken. But when you went out in public with him, the way people would react to him must have been stunning to you as a little kid and your brothers.
Well, let me tell you, it's very funny that whenever you look at pictures that the whole family is together, you will see my reaction. I was always, always very serious. And I had this serious, intense look in my eyes. I guess I was trying to figure out what was going on. Always very serious. You know, Roberto was a little more happy, whatever. Ricky was just a little baby, whatever. But me, and I don't, you know, I just look at it and I said, check that out. You know, ever since I've been, you know, just looking around and seeing what's going on and taking in what's the reaction of the people that were surrounding him and everything. But later, you know what? I got to tell you something. There was a time, as growing up, that I felt we had like a special shield. I thought if I was like a superhero or something, you know, that if I was gonna get shot at, you know, something was gonna happen, that the bullets were not gonna hit me. You know, that's how I felt. You know, I guess it's that transition when you realize how big all of a sudden, you know, your dad is, how we're looked upon and everything else, and it's like, wow, you know, this is kind of cool at the same time. But then also there's the responsibilities that come along with everything.
Was it ever a burden for you and your brothers?
You know, I don't know that it was a burden. I took it in such a way that it taught me that the decisions you make, you know, is the impact you're going to have on people. And when we were playing ball, imagine being the son of Roberto Clemente, but then having a brother that signed the year before you did. So now you're being compared not only to your father, but also to what your brother is doing day to day. People say, so you had a lot of pressure. I said, well, we always play together in the same team. We're only 11 months apart. So, and he always wore 21, and I was more than happy for him to wear it. I wore 12, you know? Mm-hmm. And he was never competing, you know, even though Roberto was extremely competitive. We would play, and we would play baseball inside the house with a tennis racket, inside actually our rooms. And if I would beat him, oh, forget it. He would have a fit. He would go crazy. I'm glad he's not on the line to defend himself right now. It's my turn.
There's something else. We're with Luis Clemente as we talk about the induction of his father into the Hall of Fame. In preparing for this interview, Luis, I read that your dad, and this is something I didn't know, that your dad told your mom on more than one occasion that he feared that he might die young.
He was prophetic about it. He not only told her he thought, he knew he was going to die young. And he would tell her, and when I do, I know, you know, you're young, you're beautiful, you're a gorgeous woman. I know you're going to redo your life, you know, and find someone. Mom says, first of all, don't talk about sad things. Second of all, I assure you, I will never, ever date anyone. If that were to happen, and that's exactly how it happened.
Sure.
Recently, she told me, you know what? When I see your father, I'm going to tell him, see, I told you. You know, she it's a love story. It's a true love story. You know what? When you talk about mom and dad, that's what love's all about.
Do you have any recollection of him going into the Hall of Fame?
You know what? I remember being in Cooperstown. I mean, we were there with all. Dad had quite a group for friends. You know, they come from all walks of life, all different races. You had blacks, you had a German, you had Jews, you had, it was like amazing. You know, we grew up calling all of these people family. So the diversity was immense, you know, and all of them were there in Cooperstown with us. And they were part of our lives as we grew up, since we were born. You know, we would see them in occasions. They would come and spend Christmas or New Year's here in Puerto Rico. Matter of fact, Dad had asked one of the whole family, he wanted them to be in Puerto Rico. The day Dad was leaving on that plane, Mom left and did not see the plane take off because this family was coming in on the commercial side, where they were on the cargo side. She had to go to the terminal to pick them up. And these people were there with us. I remember we had big bow ties, and that was Nevin's doing. Nevin Routh, who was, you know, one of the German who was there, Mr. Garland, that the first years that he signed with the Pirates, he never rented a place. He stayed with this African-American couple, the Garlands, and his Liberty, and he never rented an apartment until basically he married. So, I mean, the stories are incredible. Those people were there with us in Cooperstown, and I remember being there and everything, but not details of the ceremony itself.
Well, in fairness, you were a baby. You were six, 7 years old.
6 years old,
I just want to ask you this. Why is number 21 not retired? There was an effort to do that across baseball after baseball gallantly made the decision to retire Jackie Robinson's number 42. We're talking here about a man who was larger than life, as big in death as he was in life, if not larger, the first Latin American to be enshrined, and the credentials, my goodness, 12 All-Star games, 4 batting titles, a Most Valuable Player award, 12 consecutive Gold Gloves, 13 consecutive 300 seasons. Why isn't it retired, and is there a movement to get it retired, Luis?
The reasons for which that number should be retired are plenty. We let the fans be the ones who initiated that campaign. We didn't get involved directly in the request, but I want to save it because we're starting conversations with the new administration, and so far they're going very well. You know, there's going to be a Pirate Marlins series here in Puerto Rico by the end of May.
That's right.
We're celebrating Clemente Day on the 31st. As part of what we're doing as a legacy, we're doing so much but once again, very little is known that we had a conversation about this, and we're going to be part of the official events that are going to happen that day on the 31st. So, you know, it's my uncle, his only living brother, Matino, is not in favor. He has a different opinion. He says, if the number is retired, then, you know, there might be, it may be forgotten, which is not going to happen. We all know it's not going to happen. But at least he says, whenever I see that number, it reminds me of him. And to give you an example, when part of the cleanups we do in partnership with UPI, we had Mike Lorenzen in November with us. Was it in November? Doing a clinic here in Puerto Rico, and Nick Basso as well, and you know, from UPI, the players that come down as well, and Tony Graffinino. It's amazing what these guys do. So we join them, we join efforts with them, and all of a sudden, Mike Lorenzen was so into, you know, the Clemente legacy and everything else that he told us that whenever he would have an opportunity, he would love to wear number 21. It happens that the player that was wearing 21 in Cincinnati got traded, and immediately he requested it, he got it, and there was an article that came out recently about him wearing 21, and there's a picture with all of us here in Puerto Rico. So, you know, there's many different ways to honor. We have one we haven't shared yet, and that's what I'm hoping I'm going to be able to do when I do speak with the commissioner and see, you know, because there's a lot that is being done, but there's many ways to continue to honor that, and I think what I propose may be considered. So we'll see.
Good. I hope so, and I hope the new administration gets it done for you. As you know, Neil Walker, the longtime second baseman at Pittsburgh, is now a New York Met, and recently told the story about the fact that his father, the former pitcher Tom Walker, was essentially chased away by your father as he helped load the materials onto the plane, it being New Year's Eve, that your father said to him, it's New Year's Eve, go and have a good time. And Neil Walker knows that saved his father's life. Luis, we are so grateful to have you on the show to keep the legacy alive of this great man as we look back on his induction into the Baseball Hall of Fame. My best wishes to you, your brothers, and your mom, who have been so kind to me through the years. I thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you for keeping Dad's memory alive.
So that'll do it for us on MLB.com. If you're on the move, thanks for the ride, and thanks for listening to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.